I think anger is a good place to start because it's recognizing that something's not right. And then from there, it turns to passion. And so I have these fires from all these different places. So now I have a bonfire inside of me, and then I can direct it into passion and do good things.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you are listening to Into the Fold. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. As a foundation, we get a lot of our energy from the belief that through our work and the work of those we support and partner with, that we're making the world a more just and equal place. In addition to improving mental health, we want our programs to make a material difference for marginalized communities in general. One problem is that grants, our core activity, have a definite start and stop date, while advocating for marginalized communities implies an ongoing relationship that takes time to mature, and then, if successful, entails an obligation to continue. Joining us today is Latasha Taylor, mental health organizer for Grassroots Leadership of Texas. In 2016, she became a peer policy fellow for the Hogg Foundation. She is here with us to give her take on what it means to advocate for marginalized communities and why it's so important. Latasha, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So tell us about yourself and your work. How did you get your start at Grassroots Leadership, and what kind of impact do you hope to have?
I myself have worked within the field of mental health as a provider, also as an advocate, organizer, and having my own lived experience and being directly impacted, that's how I came into the place and space of working within the community and trying to take action. 2016 was an amazing year. I was excited to even learn about a peer policy fellowship. That was an incredible opportunity that I cannot thank the Hogg Foundation for implementing. And actually, I learned about it at PeerFest from other peer specialists in the community. And I interviewed. Grassroots Leadership is progressive. They're open to new ideas. And Kate Graziani, who's my mentor, we met, and then I think it was we immediately decided that we were a team that could work together, and that's how I got involved with Grassroots Leadership.
Okay. And I want to dig into your job title just a little bit. Mental Health Plus Organizer. What does it mean to you to identify with both of those? And how does each part inform and or challenge the other?
For me, Mental Health Organizer is a way to communicate the fact that I'm organizing communities and trying to empower and bring agency and voice to those of us who are not heard in the space of mental health. I think sometimes the tension or conflict for me is that mental health is a loaded term. It implies that you're ill and sick. It doesn't focus on the wellness. Mental health gives us the idea that your wellness is locked into just treatment when it's wider and bigger than that. And the last thing, I think, being an organizer, as someone who, I'm an activist, and a lot of the issues that those with mental health issues are facing are civil rights as well. Having civil rights violated sometimes, I think, has more of a negative effect on an individual's wellness than lack of treatment.
Right. And I like that you actually use the term activist, which frankly is one that we sometimes shy away from. We tend to prefer somewhat less loaded terms, advocacy, et cetera, et cetera. But we get a lot of our energy from the things that activists are doing. And kind of navigating that tension, I think, is a very important part of what it is that an organization like ours has to do.
I think for me, I'm often asked, why do you call yourself an organizer? Why do you call yourself an activist? And I think as an advocate and from that place, I'm educating, I'm trying to be objective, I'm trying to just disseminate information and get an understanding. But probably as an activist, I'm trying to change the language. I'm trying to sort of challenge that dialogue between what we accept as is and bringing alternatives. And a good example I would use, if anyone knows Latasha, you'll know that Harriet Tubman is my idol. She embodies everything that I ever wanted to do in any place or space. And I always say, wow, she became aware, advocated for herself, no matter what that looked like. She broke the law and she moved forward. And then once she got there to the other side and saw, wow, the awareness, the things that I've learned for myself, the beautiful thing is that Harriet Tubman said, once I made up my mind that it was my liberty or my death, I'm willing to suffer that. She says, that's when I was really free. And so I always say that, wow, I can think of a lot of wonderful people in history, but Harriet Tubman, I mean, who goes back? Who goes back again and again and again? Yeah. That her liberation was invested in liberating not only her family, but others. And
I can't be free if you're not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's activism to me versus being an advocate. Frederick Douglass was a wonderful advocate, but Harriet Tubman was an activist.
Right. So, I mean, since I started at Hogg a little over 5 years ago, I've had many chances to appreciate how people bring their identities with them into their work. And we're going to be having a lot of conversation around these parts about what exactly that means. As we go off on our new strategic direction, which is going to entail grappling with these sorts of issues much more frankly. And so you're a peer, as well as an African-American woman, as well as an organizer, as well as a mental health professional. Do you feel equally empowered in expressing all of those sides of yourself in your work?
I do. I think expressing oneself is it makes me, I'm validated. That validates my experience that I'm not. An ally is important, but someone directly impacted with lived experience is sort of a different place and space. You don't just understand, you know. And when you're coming forward from all those different aspects of being a person that doesn't have equal rights in the community, it gives you a wider lens to see what's happening in any space where someone's being discriminated against. And quite frankly, it's anger sometimes. Anger, if you hold anger in a place, it'll eat you up. But if you use anger, it's just to me like fire. It can do good things, but you don't want to burn anything down with it, or especially yourself. But to me, anger gets things done in a way. When you become livid and mad, you realize that something close and personal to you that you own is being taken. And then you are like, wow, I deserve the same thing. So as a Black woman, as a person who's been within the institution of mental health and being a woman and grappling with all those different things, I think all of those places and spaces make you angry. And I think anger is a good place to start because it's recognizing that something's not right. And then from there, it turns to passion. And so I have these fires from all these different places. So now I have a bonfire inside of me, and then I can direct it into passion and do good things. And I think how that all of those different aspects inform on one another.
Okay. So now you've got me curious. I hope you don't mind me asking, what is the angriest that you've been recently that's relevant to our conversation, and what were the circumstances?
The Texas Supreme Court and the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, they came together January 11th, and it was for the establishment of the Judicial Commission on Mental Health, and I'm excited that finally in Texas, they're finally recognizing the criminalization of the behavior of those with mental health issues. And while there was conversation on the capacity and lack of for public health and access and needing more evidence-based practice, there was little testimony around civil rights, mm-hmm. that a lot of the things that are happening is a civil rights issue. I was livid. I was excited and happy because I believe in starting and beginning. However, it really surprised me that the word civil rights or human rights or it was a word that I didn't hear, and it made me really, really, really angry because it puts the responsibility of the problem on tax dollars, or it puts the problem on super utilizers. There's this blame on an individual versus a system that has failed, quite frankly. I wish that because this was the a judicial commission on mental health, that the idea of civil rights was not there and present, and that made me angry.
Okay. As it would have me too. The word I used in my intro, marginalized, is not embraced by everyone. For some people, it's stigmatizing. For others, it's too bland or not specific enough. Maybe it's too trendy. How do you feel about it, and how big a place does that word have in your vocabulary? And how do you prefer to talk about issues of inequality and disparities?
I believe in authenticity, and I've been told that I'm outspoken. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll say things that I think, I'll say a thing that is obvious to me, and then I'll get this look like, oh my, how could she? And I didn't say it in an angry or mean way. I felt like I was being very diplomatic. And then I stop and I think, should I not have said that? And then those who are marginalized, meaning those who have had that experience, are relieved that somebody said it. So the term marginalized to me sort of puts the responsibility on the individual who's impacted. It's their fault. It's their blame. And then for me to be in a place and space to speak up for those who are marginalized, it feels sometimes like it's the individuals who are listening that are making these decisions that put individuals in a space and place where they don't have equal rights. It feels like we're marginalized from them, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. That the marginalization isn't this, oh, this objective term of those who are not included. Marginalization, can sometimes be a little vague, yeah. But sometimes the vague is good because it builds a camaraderie. Whether you're gay or you're African American, or whether you have a disability, everyone understands the idea of feeling like they don't belong and that they're not included. And almost people even buy into the idea that they don't have rights because they're marginalized.
Yeah.
Hope that answered the question.
Yeah. No, that answered it. Yeah, definitely. As a result of our new strategic direction, which I mentioned, we're focusing more explicitly on marginalized communities. A key part of that is having some basic fluency in the language of power and privilege. And I already alluded to these fraught but hopefully productive conversations that we're going to be having around here, meaning the Hogg Foundation. And among advocates, this can be challenging and even frightening terrain. I mean, nobody likes to be called out on their privilege. And of course, depending on the situation, people will even dispute that they have the privilege that you're claiming. And in your experience, what do people do to make these conversations easier or more difficult?
For me, I'm not afraid or uncomfortable with speaking up in that place and space because I know that what I'm doing is going to make change that's going to be good for those who feel like they're not impacted and that they feel like they're the perpetrators, and it's also going to be a place for survivors to benefit. And I remember that when I come forward and have uncomfortable conversations. The idea, speaking on privilege, things that make individuals uncomfortable, I always start with trying to understand. effective communication is first understanding and listening. Mm-hmm. And you know that cliche, don't listen because you're waiting to speak next.
Yeah.
But genuinely put yourself and try to understand. And then once you understand, it's easier for you to have a conversation about privilege. And one of the things that I've learned, that's the one thing about being authentic, is that you say what you mean and you mean what you say, and then you're able to get people to respond to you in a place and space that they wouldn't in without your being there. So now people are having a conversation and you put something in the room, and if you come forward and say, there's an elephant in the room, then that gives them permission. Okay, you want to talk about that elephant? Sometimes people come back at you, but that's great to me that it's recognized. And as far as the privilege, this is what I've learned with individuals. It's not somebody's fault that they have privilege. It's a responsibility. Yeah. And then people say, what does that mean? I said, fault means blame. It's like I'm saying that you're a bad, bad person because of a system that gives you privileges that does bad, bad things to people. However, responsibility is the ability to respond, right? You're in a place and space of power, and you have an ability to respond in a different way if you're aware and you can hear my story and know where I'm coming from. Privilege is the idea that I've worked hard for something, and if you haven't done the same thing, then why are you making me feel bad about something that I've won? And what do you want? You want to have more than me? You want to beat me? And I tell people, I don't want the world to change. I'm not looking for a utopia. I'm looking for balance. And even you clearly would agree that balance is a good thing. Our whole universe, nature shows us that balance is the best way for any entity to move forward, to be successful. And I say that this is a conversation about balance. This is a conversation about awareness. And this is a conversation not to challenge something deserving. Your thinking in that space is you're thinking to yourself that what you get and what you have has no bearing on an advantage that you have because of a system that surrounds all of us. And then an individual may say, well, if it's a system, then what can I do about it? And what? Why do you think that I'm more empowered? Because you have a choice to take that power or not. You have a choice over my power. You have a place and a space to do things that I don't because of a system, not because I intrinsically or within my being or my self-agency can't do. And that's what you have to recognize. You have your self-agency. If I had my self-agency, I think the outcomes of your privileges would be different. And so I have that conversation from that space.
Yeah. I mean, one reason why people get impatient with listening is because sometimes you're so sure that you know what someone's going to say, you already have your response rehearsed. And holding that in abeyance gets to be very challenging in practice. And I admire those who are able to do it, you know, because I think I'm bright and clever, and there's not a whole lot I haven't heard already. And when I'm in my forensic mode, you know, I know what my next response is going to be, and I want to get there, you know, and so I'm sure I have as much growth in that area as anyone else to do, you know.
I think to respond to that, I paid my way through college by arguing and running my mouth. I debated.
Yeah.
I did debate for a long time. And as I excelled and moved up, individuals would say, man, what's your secret? Do you do extra research, or are you just clever with logic? And I say, I listen. Mm-hmm. And I don't listen to something because I have, like you said, I know what they're going to say, and I already have this prepared. I listen because that gives me an opportunity to find a place and a space of agreement. So a person's body language, who's saying it, and their person behind what they're saying is important for me to understand. What can I say and do that's going to impact them and those who are listening outside of our debate? Listening isn't about the words that are coming to you. Listening is a form of making yourself vulnerable and open to hear what a being behind those words is trying to express to you.
Yeah.
Do you feel me? That expression.
Yeah. What are your goals for 2018 as a mental health organizer, and how will you know that you've had success?
The difference, I think, between advocacy and organizing is that I'm working from a place of space as a person with lived experience, mm-hmm. and there is a us versus a them working, a them. Transformational organizing is leaving behind agency and change. So I wanted to preface that to let people understand the kind of organizing that I do. The kind of organizing I do is that I don't want to go into a community and pat somebody on the head and say, thank you for helping, now you get a piece of this. If I don't leave behind agency and ability for this to move forward after I'm long gone and passed, then I haven't done the organizing from the philosophy that I believe in. So for me, if that's my primary goal is action and providing alternatives and remaining authentic, then that sort of informs on what my targets and goals are. First of all, by default, they're not mine.
Yeah.
They're ours. A lot of the things, like as I'm speaking now and I work in this place and space, I'm always thinking about the conversations that I have with those who are more like me. And so our goals are things that I've talked to with other peers or other people who are not disclosed but have lived experience. At the UT Law School, we're having a clinic on psychiatric advance directives. And I am really excited about that because for those of us who are in this place and space and need a voice, a psychiatric advance directive is a way to speak out and to build agency. It came from the Self-Determination Act in 1991. So it's an opportunity to speak out on what you do and don't want outside of a clinical role. So I'm excited to be working with the students and the lawyers and individuals in the community. But particularly, this clinic is going to be peer-led, community-led, consumer-led, whatever term one understands. And I want to start the beginning work on a peer-led respite center.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very passionate about alternatives in the community. And the last thing, I think my goal is to really demystify the process of our legislative sessions.
Yeah.
I don't want individuals to feel like, oh, that's what they do up there, and then whatever they drop, I'll deal with when it happens.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a PhD or academic. Harriet Tubman couldn't read or write, and they're going to put her on a $20 bill. And I always bring that.
Maybe.
And
keep hearing different things every time.
Thank you for putting in that. I want to pass out any information. She's up for being put on a $20
yes.
bill. You don't have to be.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Oh, especially because of who it's replacing. So that's my next goal, is to bring more and more people into the process where they feel like that. Being in a room with people speaking a completely different language, and I don't speak that language, so how can I even be in that conversation and communicate? And then you do speak a language, and that individuals do listen. So I think the Psychiatric Advance Directives clinic is exciting to me because it brings together different individuals from different places about civil rights that informs on public health.
Yeah.
And then the peer-led respite is a place where sometimes you don't need to be in a clinical setting to deal with your wellness. It's also a means of, a lot of the work I do is with criminal justice and mental health. And a lot of the diversion and the zero intercept, there's the intercept model. And the zero intercept, if you can go read about it, is to never be arrested or never be in a place or space where you have to be in forced confinement. What are some alternatives? And the peer-led respite has shown to be very effective. It works. And I would really like to see that happen in Austin because it's not in Texas. I think I've done my research. Austin would be the first if we were to have a peer-led respite center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Latasha, this place and this space has certainly been inspirited by your presence. Thank you so much for joining us and having this conversation. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, and to our listeners, if you like what you hear, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and sign up for the podcast emails. You can find the sign-up box on the podcast landing page under the News and Resources menu on our website, hog.utexas.edu. Thank you for joining us.